live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
All right, so the first few weeks of the 2018 NFL season have taught us a few things. Primarily, it's taught me that if you want to get right in a hurry, you want to play the New York Giants. The Philadelphia Eagles came into last night having to stop the bleeding, having to get right in a hurry, having to save their entire season. And they were able to do just that. They're on the verge of falling to 2-4, last place in the NFC East. And then the 2017 Eagles showed up to save the 2018 Eagles. All of a sudden, Carson Wentz looks like Carson Wentz. He's extending plays. He's finding receivers. He's scrambling for first downs. He looked like the 2017 Carson Wentz before he got hurt, like he did on this play to open up the scoring last night.
Two tight ends in this formation on a 3rd and 7. Shotgun. Wentz steps up. Protection holds up. Wentz out of the pocket to his right. Looking downfield. Wentz throws on the move to the end zone. Caught. Touchdown. Wentz with a strike to Jeffrey. Touchdown, Philadelphia.
Thanks to Westwood One. I mean, I don't want to sit here and act like I'm Troy Aikman or anything, but seems to me that play violated pretty much every single rule that every single quarterback's ever taught. Throwing late across the middle and across your body, and yet Wentz can make that work. And last night he was able to make pretty much everything else he tried work. The RPO was back, and it was clicking. Guys were getting open in space. Running backs had larger holes to hit. Wentz was picking up third downs like they were being given away for free, which they pretty much are when you play the Giants. But this wasn't just about an Eagles team abusing a crappy Giants team. Philly looked good. Philly looked like Philly again. That was the Eagle offense that we saw last year. And a team that hadn't scored 24 in any game this season got there by halftime last night. And it was stupid how easy it was. They may have eaten a few punches earlier this season, but they got up off the canvas, and that was an inspired team last night, an inspired effort. A team that knew that people should not count them out. I half expected to hear that they had a pregame pep talk from that guy who was going on and on about Jiminy Cricket.
When Muhammad Ali was down, did you count him out? When Jiminy Cricket was down, did you count him out? This is the comeback, Doug. 2-3. Did you see DeMarco Murray? This is the game, Doug. Woo!
This is the comeback, Doug. This is the game, Doug. When Jiminy Cricket was down, did you count him out?
When Jiminy Cricket was down, did you count him out?
What? That's the best part of that whole bite. When Jiminy Cricket was down.
When Jiminy Cricket was down.
Who? The hell? What the hell is Jiminy Cricket? Anyway, he was a guy who obviously was down and got back up. This is the game, Doug!
This is the game, Doug!
They were even breaking out Hulk Hogan calls at the line of scrimmage.
On this season.
Hulk Hogan! Now, of course, as always, I know what you think before you think it. Spare me the tweets and the emails about, oh yeah, brother, what you gonna do when I try to draw you offsides on fourth down? Arr! So the Eagles are now in first place in the NFC East. That's how bad that division was. They went from having their entire season ripping apart to being in first place in 60 minutes. They're there. They're there to stay. I mean, who's going to run them down? The Redskins, Dallas, the Giants, all scrubs, all of them. Philadelphia is clearly the class of that division. And yes, I know it was only the Giants. And the Giants make everybody look like class. You and 10 of your friends could line it up against the Giants and feel pretty good damn good about yourself right now. Again, it does not make Philly the team to beat. The title does not run through Philly. Notice I'm not saying to be the champs, you have to beat the champs. Because there are still questions. Still questions about the Eagle offensive line. Still questions as to why Carson Wentz is taking so many hits and whether or not he'll be able to sustain them. It's still a team sustaining and dealing with injuries, including a new one to Jason Peters. It might be a torn biceps. So I'm not going to say to be the champs, you have to beat the champs, and it's got to run through Philadelphia. Hell, I wouldn't mind seeing them get over 500 first before I say any of that. But their season could have ended last night, and instead, it looks like it just started. And they've got the Giants to thank for that. Always the Giants. The Giants were exactly what Philly needed.
Exactly.
My man Chris Haynes is back. Chris, good morning. What's up, bud? How are you?
Romy Rome, it's always a pleasure, man. Thank you.
You too, man. Great to have you back. All right, so the NBA, Chris, is amazing because there's so many things I could talk to you about, and I'm sure we'll cover it all. Well, not time for everything, but let me start with Jimmy Butler and Minnesota. To the best of your ability, can you tell us what the hell happened exactly in practice on Wednesday?
Wow. You know what, Jim? I've never really heard of anything quite like it. Obviously, there's some brush-ups and there's some altercations that occurred during an intense practice. That's common, but the way in which it happened. So basically, you know, I wrote this for Yahoo, but I'll try to give a breakdown. I was told Jimmy showed up at practice late, and when he showed up, he grabbed a member off of the third team out, like just impromptu, just snatched them, got out there on the floor, and started playing against the starters. And I heard he was just talking trash and, you know, cussing at, you know, everybody. And it got to a point where, like, even some of the veterans initially thought that maybe he might have been talking about them. And, you know, then they were later found out, okay, we know who this is directed at. You know, obviously, Carl Anthony Towns and Andrew Wiggins. And it got to a point where Jimmy Butler even switched on to Carl Anthony and, you know, saying, this dude ain't going to do, you know, bleep on me. And I think it was Derrick Rose who gave him the entry pass, gave Carl the entry pass in the post. And I heard he kicked it right back out. he didn't want no part of that. But, you know, I heard he bounced out and dipped as soon as the scrimmage was over, while the rest of the team proceeded to go to their stretching drill. And it was crazy. Players were, you know, some were mystified, some were distraught, others were motivated after it. And it was just mixed emotions there. But it was definitely something that wasn't a positive environment, particularly for when you got a bunch of young guys who you think the team is trying to make the face of that franchise.
Chris Haynes joining us, a senior NBA insider for Yahoo Sports. So, Chris, that was my whole point. He didn't go in there to make the team better. He didn't go in there to make guys better. Bottom line, what do you think that he was looking to accomplish in that practice? What was the message he was looking to send?
Basically, I don't know what caused him to just jump into that session like that, but when he jumped in, it's clear his mindset was to show everybody that the team needs him, and he said that on a couple occasions. You know, he screamed that to Scott Layton, the general manager of the Timberwolves, and so that was his point. He wanted to go out there and embarrass those guys, and you know, just from a competitive nature, a lot of players can understand that, and they got it. But when you're dealing with young guys who haven't been able to adapt to the aggressive leadership style of Jimmy, they didn't take it that well, from what I was told. And I was told that Cat actually, you know, got the team in a huddle after that session and just tried to just rally guys to keep their emotions in check. But I was told that little speech kind of rang hollow. And so you can tell this is an issue that clearly should have been avoidable, but it's gotten to this point. And right now, you know, the plan is to bring Jimmy back into the fold. And, you know, I'm told Jimmy's not going to miss a paycheck. He's not going to hold out, but it's still not the ideal situation to be in.
The Friday edition of the Daily Jungle is brought to you by Ferguson. Listen to this. No matter how big or small your team is, Ferguson has a winning game plan for pro contractors. With thousands of plumbing repair parts, knowledgeable associates, and the largest national footprint in the game, when the pressure is on, you can count on Ferguson. Chris Haynes joining us, a senior NBA insider for Yahoo Sports. His chemistry is so jacked up. This situation is so jacked up. Like, Chris, so which one is it? Is his message, and you're right, he said it reportedly to the GM, you need me, you bleeping need me, but at the same time he's been saying, trade me, trade me. So which one is it to him? You need me or trade me?
Well, you know, there was reports that of an extension that he was trying to get, that the team wasn't willing to give up. You know, there's some salary cap issues that the Timberwolves have. They have a couple bloated contracts, which wouldn't allow them to be able to fork out the money that Jimmy was asking for. So I think that's what ultimately led to all of this coming ahead. And we have to remember, like, his issues with young guys, that happened the entire season. Like, he's always had issues with young guys, particularly young guys who are talented, and I guess players that who he don't feel give the maximum effort. Remember in Chicago, his Chicago days, Taj Gibson, Luol Deng, Derrick Rose, and those guys. Like, he came into the league around guys who, like, gave it their all, bust their butt. And so to come to Minnesota when you're playing with talented guys who the franchise wants to hand over the keys to them, that's where I think he was taken a little bit back. And, you know, he talked about it. You know, he did an interview with Rachel Nichols and talked about how Cat is the most talented and Andrew Wiggins is the most gifted, but he works harder than both of them. And so that's clearly his issue. But I think ultimately it probably would have been initiated, or it probably was initiated, with the contract situation.
That, and he thinks they're soft. We're talking to Chris Haynes. All right, Chris, before you go, let's talk about LeBron. In addition to your reporting on that story, you've got a great piece up right now about LeBron and his arrival in Los Angeles. The thinking that coming to L.A. means the end of his streak of finals appearances. What does LeBron think about that?
Yeah, he said, look, man, he said, my peers respect me. He said, that's all that matters. Because, you know, we talked about his impressive streak of 8 straight finals. But, you know, everybody always says, well, if he was in the Western Conference, he wouldn't have had that streak. And so I kind of brought that up because there was a lot of people who thought before he made the decision to go to L.A. that he wouldn't pass up the opportunity to have a clear path to the finals every single year. And he told me, like, look, man, he said, that streak didn't even come up in my head when I thought about joining the West and, you know, being in the same vicinity as the Golden State Warriors. He basically said he's here to compete, and he's going to be patient with these young guys. And he said, look, I'm not giving up that streak yet. He said, I'm going to still try to do what I can to continue it on. But he did admit and acknowledge. He said, but at the end of the day, all streaks are meant to come to an end at some point. So, you know, it was just, you know, I was there in Vegas, you know, when they played Lakers and Golden State. And it's a different feeling. It's a different vibe. And I think he understands the situation that he's in, and he might not be able to compete right now. And that's what's going to be interesting looking forward to, Jim, because I know LeBron. He's not the most patient guy. So I want to see how patient he can be with this young team for an 82-game season.
So, Chris, in terms of those young guys, I mean, for instance, playing with LeBron can make things a lot easier for a lot of guys. It can make your career, your life, your legacy a lot easier, but it can also be a real challenge for some guys if they're not up to it. It's not for everybody. We know this. So what's it like being LeBron's teammate, and how do you think the guys on this roster are going to react to playing with LeBron?
You know what? That's going to be right now. LeBron is, you know, singing praises to the Brandon Ingram, Kyle Kuzma, Lonzo Ball, and I know LeBron, and I know what he does. You know, all of that is premeditated, and it's all to, like, give them a confidence boost. But at the same time, he understands that when he says these words of high praise, he also wants to see if these guys are going to relish it and step up to the plate and produce. And so I think that's what he's looking for. And so this year for the Lakers, Jim, it's basically a one-year rental for a lot of guys. They want to see if these players have what it takes to play with, you know, the best player in the game, but somebody who's has strong opinions, someone who has a great impact and clout throughout the organization. Can they perform and play with that? And that's going to be an evaluation period for the Lakers and LeBron. And so it's going to be interesting. I want to see how Lonzo Ball, how that's going to work. I'm interested in seeing if Lance Stephenson, JaVale McGee, and those guys, Michael Beasley, if they have what it takes to produce in this audition type year. And so it's going to be. I know there's a lot of other better teams out there, But there's not many teams out there with the storylines that the Lakers are going to provide every year. That's why you'll see me in L.A. a lot this season, Jim.
Good, good. Chris Haynes, my guest. Listen, you mentioned Lonzo. I can't step off a curb in this town without somebody asking me this. I know you get it, too. So let's hit this before you go. How do you think Lonzo is going to work with LeBron, both on the ball and off it?
Oh, I don't know, Jim. You know, Lonzo has – that jumper has to be improved. And not to take it off your question, Jim, but, like, Rondo was playing some good basketball. Like, we thought Rondo was done a couple years ago. He's had a solid preseason. He's leading those guys out there. He's already a voice on that roster. It's going to be very hard for Luke Walton to take Rondo off the court because Walton did say that during preseason that Lonzo is their starting point guard when healthy. But if Lonzo hasn't corrected that shot, if that shot is not consistent, I just don't see how you can take Rondo off the floor. Lonzo has to improve that jumper or show consistency. In that way, Walton could play both of those guys in the backcourt together. So I think Rondo will probably be more of an issue for Lonzo than LeBron James because I think Rondo is going to be that good. And I don't know. That's what I'm looking for. When we're talking about this year evaluation period, I think this year evaluation period is not just for the guys on these one-year deals, but also for somebody like Lonzo. Because we know LeBron James, he doesn't necessarily need a true point guard to play alongside. You know, he's pretty much everything. So that's what I'm saying. For a lot of different reasons and storylines, that's one of them. That's going to be very, very interesting.
All right, so really quickly, as a quick follow-up, because you bring this up, what about Rondo? What about Rondo? How does Rondo fit into all this, not only with LeBron, but with Lonzo?
Yeah, well, Rondo, you know, that was kind of, you know, when the Lakers put some of these pieces together, you know, it was kind of, a lot of people were kind of like puzzled. Like, there's a lot of pieces that look like it really don't fit, but Rondo brings the intangibles, Jim, like the leadership, the vet. He's another coach on the floor. And somehow, some way, him and LeBron have been able to coexist. LeBron has gave up dominating the ball, and he's allowed Rondo to go and do his thing. And that's the thing, too, Jim. Like, when LeBron respects you, he allows you to play your game because he trusts you. So that's why I think it's going to be an easy transition for Rondo, and I think that's why he's been able to thrive thus far. Lonzo, he's going to have to earn that from LeBron and earn that from everybody else. We're still unknown about what type of player Lonzo was going to be in this league.
There's some great NBA content right there. A senior NBA insider for Yahoo Sports. He is Fresno-raised and a very good friend of the program. Chris Haynes is my guest. Chris, great to have you back. Appreciate you, man. Have a great weekend.
Rome, Rome, always. Thank you. Take care, my guy.
If you're watching some baseball this weekend, watch it while checking out MyBookie. With Vivid Seats, a brand new sponsor here, you can attend the concert, the show, or sporting event of your choice and do so at a great price. Here's what I like about Vivid Seats. It is the top source for tickets for all the live events that you want to go to, and you can sort by price or look for the seats in the section and the row of your choice. And to make it even better, Vivid Seats is reaching out to you new customers and will give you a promo code, which will give you 10% off your first ticket order so you can save even more money. Here's what you do. You go to the App Store or Google Play and download the Vivid Seats app. First-time customers, make sure you use the promo code ROME and get 10% off your first Vivid Seats order. Every single purchase is backed by a 100% buyer guarantee. From the biggest concerts and games to the hottest theater and more, Vivid Seats has it all. Make sure you download that app and enter the promo code ROME and get 10% off your first order on Vivid Seats. Make a memory that lasts a lifetime. Let Vivid Seats help you get to your favorite live event. Vivid Seats, this is a great company with an awesome proposition. Check it out yourself. Vivid Seats. Let's talk about last night's game. After the Eagles beat the Giants 34-13 last night, there are a couple of ways I can go with this. For instance, do I start the show with the glass half full and talk about the Eagles looking like the Eagles once again? Or do I start this show and talk about the glass being half empty and talk about how the Giants are looking like the Giants once again? The answer is neither. Neither. Reason being, the Giants do not look like the Giants. The Giants look worse than the Giants. If that was your first time watching the Giants, then you came away. I mean, this season. If that was your first time watching them this season, you probably came away with two observations. One, holy crap, Saquon is good. Two, holy crap, the Giants are terrible. The Giants are terrible. Their team is ripping apart, and it's not even the middle of October. I mean, they're horrible. Truly horrible. I mean, given the talent that the Giants have at the skill positions on offense, I'm actually proud of them for being that horrible. You think it's easy to be that bad when you have that kind of skill on offense? It's not. They're 1-5 this season. They've got 4 wins in their last 22 games. They're getting booed at home early in games, and the only reason they're not being booed late in games is because everybody has already left. And it did not have to be that way. They nearly beat Carolina on Sunday. They had a reeling Eagles team coming to town on a short week. They broke out their sweet all-white gear. Last night was a time to break out. Instead, they end up breaking apart.
2nd and 2 for New York. Line of scrimmage is the 33. Manning takes the snap, throws it over the middle, and it is picked off on the deflection. The Eagles have it running to the near side across the 20. And out of bounds, it's Grugier Hill. The Giants turned it over early.
Westwood won with that. That is the second play from scrimmage. All sorts of questions to ask on that play. Like, of all the weapons on the field, why is Scott Simonson the third string tight end? Why is he the target? Better yet, of all the weapons on the field, why is Scott Simonson on the field at all? And it got worse. At the end of the first quarter, Eli Manning had a passer rating of 7.8. At one point, cameras caught his head coach, Pat Shurmur, saying, throw the ball. That was after Eli checked down for a 5-yard gain on 2nd and 19. So let me interrupt all of this to say Saquon Barkley had 13 carries, 130 yards. Saquon Barkley had 9 receptions for an additional 99 yards. This dude is amazing. All class. Unfortunately, he's surrounded by all trash. I mean, it doesn't even matter how much of a stud this guy is. I mean, if the rest of the offense were even decent, Barkley would be the topic right now because last night he did some things that you may never see ever again. Saquon Barkley on a good team would be unbelievable because Saquon Barkley is on an awful team and the guy's still amazing. And now back to our regularly scheduled programming about how crappy the Giants are. Yes, it is easy to get distracted by Odell Beckham leaving the field before halftime to get an IV and then headbutting a cooling fan. And yes, it's all tired. It's really tired. But don't let that fool you. If you're focused on him and his interviews and why Lil Wayne was a part of his interview and all of his antics, you're focused on the wrong thing. You're focused on the wrong thing. Beckham is not the problem. Beckham is not the reason the Giants are arguably the worst team in the NFL. I mean, sure, kicking or headbutting or proposing to inanimate objects is really lame. Sitting down for that ESPN interview with Lil Wayne, really weird. I mean, by the way, I like Wayne a lot. I've interviewed Wayne. I mean, compelling as hell. But why the hell was he there? I still haven't figured that out. But then again, that's not the problem. Odell Beckham is not the problem here. If anything, Odell is doing that coaching staff and the organization a favor by creating a distraction from the actual problem. Actual problem being, they're a terrible team. Arguably, the worst team in the league. They're not just looking up at the Jets now. The Giants are looking up at everybody in the NFL now. Everybody freaked out when Beckham didn't go with some political, canned response when he was asked in that ESPN interview if Eli was the problem. Remember when Beckham said, quote, I don't know. And then everybody rushed in to call this guy the worst teammate ever. Fact is, not only did he not run this guy under the bus the way everybody's saying, the answer was actually pretty charitable. The answer being, I don't know. I don't know. Is Eli the problem? I don't know. I mean, what he could have said was, is Eli the problem? Hey, have you watched any of our games? Then what do you think? Is Eli the problem? It sure as hell looks like he's the problem. I mean, this guy could have answered that question so many different ways. Because while Eli might not be their only problem, Eli is their biggest problem. not Beckham. And they've got lots of other problems. It's not just Eli. I mean, where do you even start? That offensive line is bad. Their big free agent signing, left tackle, Nate Solder, getting beaten with regularity last night. The play calling is bad. The receivers are not getting open. And the quarterback is not getting them the ball when they do get open. And their special teams are an embarrassment. And that awfulness on offense is now seeping over to the defense. Because early in that game, the Giants' defense actually did show up. They were getting some pressure on Carson Wentz. They were hitting him. They were causing some problems and disrupting things. Philly's first two touchdowns only came on short fields after an interception and a punt return. I mean, for a minute there, I was actually going to give the D some credit and say that it's not a horrible team, just a horrible offense. But then the defense remembered who they were, and they started to mail it in again. But then again, if I was on that defense, I might play the same way. I'm not here to kill the defense, crappy as it was. It's sort of hard to fault the defense because it knows no matter what they do, it'll never matter because the offense will bleep it all up. Bottom line, they're a beautiful disaster. Beautiful because they're fully imploding and it's only mid-October. Still, 10 more games of this, which means as bad as it is right now, it's going to get worse, much worse. It's a grease fire right now, but in a few weeks, it'll be a dumpster fire wrapped up inside of a train wreck. This is going to end really, really badly. And honestly, frankly, I would not miss it for the world. That was a disaster. So again, I want to get into Philadelphia. I want to talk about how Philadelphia finally looked like Philadelphia. But if you're going to ask me, is it really that? Is it really that Philadelphia is back? Or is it that Philadelphia played the Giants? And I'm going to say it's definitely the fact they played the Giants. Everybody looks like a Super Bowl contender when they play the Giants. But Philadelphia finally did start to look like Philadelphia. And whereas I'm not going to say they're Super Bowl good, they're definitely still the class of the worst division. Obviously. 1-800-636-8686. Hey, Giants fans, I know you. At least I think I know you. And I don't think that you're pissed at me for saying that, because you know I'm right. How about you come in here and talk about your team? 1-5, arguably the worst team in the NFL. I thought they had fixed the offensive line. I thought that drafting Saquon Barkley and signing Odell Beckham was going to make everything right for Eli Manning. Hate to say it about Eli, good dude, 2-time Super Bowl champ. My man has gassed out. He is a shot fighter. He's got nothing left. He can't defend himself. They should not be running him out to the middle of the ring to take that kind of punishment when he cannot defend himself. He is a shot fighter. And think about boxing. Sometimes you have great champions and they just show up one night and they no longer have it. They're shot. All of a sudden they can't land their punches. They can't defend themselves. Thing about Eli is it didn't happen overnight. The incredible thing is Coach McAdoo knew. Nate McMillan. Nate, so good to have you back. What's going on, Nate? How are you?
I'm doing good, Jim. How are you, man?
It's great. Great, Nate. Great to visit with you, and I appreciate it so much. You know, last season, Nate, you went into the season with a number of new faces, and you had a plan for the style of play that you wanted to implement. But at this time last year, did you know that you had a team that could win 48 games and make the postseason?
No. You know, I really never, take that approach, putting a number on the number of games we're looking to, or trying to win. You know, we take it one game at a time. Last year with somewhat of a new roster and the trade of Paul George, bringing in Victor and Sabonis, and we had somewhat of a new team. And, our approach was, to create a culture and, a system that, plays hard. They play the game smart. They play the game the right way. And I just feel that if you take that approach, all of us have talent here in the NBA, but if you take that approach, you're going to give yourself a chance to win games, and we was able to win a number of games last year.
48 of them. Nate McMillan joining us. Nate, you mentioned Victor. Vic Oladipo had an amazing year last year, and then he went right back to work when the offseason started. So what changes are you looking for in his game from last year to this year, and how does he look right now?
Well, you know, if the, he's still hungry. You know, he came in last year really hungry to come out and prove that he was a good player in this league. There was a lot of talk about, you know, the Pacers didn't get enough in the trade, and I think that, you know, kind of rubbed him the wrong way. But, you know, he came out very aggressive, very confident. He had worked extremely hard on his game, got off to a good start, and continued to grow really throughout the season. You know, at the beginning of the season, you know, he was basically seeing single coverage, and by the time we got to All-Star break, the end of the season and the playoffs, you know, teams started to double-team him. You know, he just did a great job of adapting to what defense was, how they were defending him, the coverage. You know, this summer he really worked on his body because he, you know, kind of took somewhat of a beating last year. You know, he did a lot for us, took a little bit of pounding, going to the basket and, you know, getting knocked to the floor. You know, so he just continued that work ethic this offseason to get himself ready for this upcoming season. And he's a guy that's very hungry to improve, get better, to make his teammates better. And he wants to someday play in the NBA Finals. And, you know, that's his goal.
Pacers head coach Nate McMillan is my guest, also a USA basketball assistant. Nate, you mentioned that he worked on his body. As long as we're talking about guys who worked on their bodies, you've got Miles Turner, and he apparently really did reshape his body in the offseason. He changed his diet. He hit the weights. He did some yoga. He said, quote, "I feel more, I don't think majestic is the word for it, but I feel better, not as wobbly," end quote. What kind of a difference have you noticed in his game as a result?
Well, I think, you know, that just shows maturity in both of these guys, you know, recognizing at the end of the season things that they need to work on. And right away, these guys went to work on those areas of their game. You know, Miles took about a week off and was right back into the gym and really worked to get stronger, you know, get his balance, you know, working on his core. You know, he spent all summer long doing that. Victor did the same thing. You know, Victor really didn't take any days off, you know, the first 3 days after the season was over. Victor was back in the gym working on his body and working on his game. So, you know, for those guys, you know, it comes a time where, you know, young guys in the league, they recognize and they mature and they see things that they need to do to improve their game. And those were areas that those guys felt that they needed to work on to come back and be able to get to that next level in their games. And, you know, both guys worked extremely hard. They've had good training camps and, you know, they're getting themselves ready for opening night.
Nate McMillan joining us, opening night right around the corner. Nate, I spoke to Cincinnati football coach Luke Fickell yesterday. We talked about culture, and he said, hey, listen, that's a real buzz term. It has been for the last few years. You mentioned it at the top of this conversation. Victor Oladipo invited the team down to Miami for workouts and team bonding back in August. What's it say about him as a leader that he put that together and that everybody who did not have a national team obligation was there? I've got to think as head coach, you were really happy to see that.
It was great, you know. Victor put this together on his own, you know, talked to us, to the organization about it in July, and, you know, all the guys went down the last week of August and worked out for 4 days in Miami, and, you know, he paid for some dinners and, you know, some speakers to come in, and, you know, he has a couple of workout people down there that trained the team. And they went through some workouts, and you know he's just been a joy, really, to work with. You know, he's a young guy that, you know, he absorbs what you say to him. He's always trying to learn how to improve and get better. He's always working on his game and, areas of his game that he feels or that, you know, the coach feels he needs to bring out on the floor to help the team improve. And, you know, one of those things was, you know, he made the decision to get the team together for a little mini camp in Miami. You know, this guy is constantly, trying to improve his game. You know, he watches a ton of film. He and Dwayne Wade are very close, so he's always picking, Wade's brain on how he can improve and do better and, win in this league. So he's just been really a joy to work with and coach.
Got a couple more minutes with Nate McMillan, the head coach of Indiana. You know, Nate, as I mentioned, you're USA assistant as well. So you, Steve Kerr, Jay Wright were named as assistants for Greg Popovich in USA basketball for the 2019-20 national team. You've been through the experience before in Beijing and London. So how excited are you? And then what's it like for even you who played in the league and has coached in the league to get around guys like that?
Jim, I mean, man, it really is a blessing. When I first was asked to coach or be an assistant back in 2005 for Coach K and having the opportunity to work with Coach K and Coach Boeheim and Mike D'Antoni, you know, I'm sitting there like pinching myself like, really? You know, you get this opportunity to work with, you know, great coaches and work with the best players in the world. And then, you know, it comes around again. You know, this summer, Coach Popovich gave me a call and asked me if I would assist him. And, you know, it's like, okay, this is happening again. You know, you get the opportunity to work with some of the best coaches in the world, and Coach K and now Coach Popovich and, you know, Steve Kerr and Coach Wright. And the best players, you know, so, you always are trying to learn and get better. And, you know, this, you know, once again, I get that opportunity to work with these guys and see how they manage their teams and, you know, listen to, you know, some of the things that, some of the ways that they teach their teams how to play. And, you know, our goal is to go for goal. You know, you have an opportunity to once again go and represent your country and go for the gold medal. So I'm just, you know, really, you know, it's another blessing, and I'm looking forward to it.
One last thing. I mean, Pop obviously is one of the best to ever do it on the professional level, but I'm fascinated. I've always been fascinated that Coach K does as well with professional players as he does. Guys rave about him. Kobe loves him. What was your biggest takeaway from working with Coach K?
He works hard. He works extremely hard, and he's prepared. There's a, you know, it's a reason he is successful, and you know his approach and you know the things that he taught all of us. He built a family within, you know, 45 days, you know, that's about the time that we spent together. And he gave, that family a vision and a roadmap on how we were going to accomplish, the gold medal and how we were going to do it. And we basically followed that roadmap. And, you know, he was the driver at that time, but he's a motivator. Just an excellent coach. You know, he works extremely hard on his team, preparing them for what they are about to, you know, the journey that they're about to go on. And so there are no surprises, you know, when you start to, you know, take that course. And it was just really that opportunity, having that opportunity to see Coach K and Jimmy Boeheim and Mike D'Antoni, you know, working with those guys and winning gold and in 2008 and world championship in 2010. And then we were fortunate enough to be invited back and win it again in 2012. He works at it. And, there's a reason that he's had the success that he's had.
Nate, let me borrow you for one more second. You know, you're focused on your team, the goals in front of you, but you were Mr. Sonic, literally Mr. Sonic. You had a brilliant career in Seattle. I love watching you play there. It's the 10th year now without the Sonics in Seattle. Did you check out the scene at the Key Arena last week when the Warriors and Kings played a preseason there? And if so, what did you make of that?
Unbelievable. It didn't surprise me, that it was sold out. And, you take your hat off to Durant and the Warriors and the Kings for, going back up, going up to Seattle and playing a preseason game because, that's a great sports town. It's, not just NBA, but, football and baseball and the Huskies. It's a great sports town. I spent 19 years in Seattle. It'll always have a special place in my heart. They certainly deserve another franchise. And, we're hoping that the NBA will one day, allow a franchise to go back to Seattle. But the atmosphere, amazing in Key Arena. Gary the Glove Payton was there. They had, Coach Wilkins and a lot of the guys who they still live in Seattle. It's a great place for sports and just a great city.
Great teams, too. Great teams. Indiana coming off a 48-win season. Nate, I'm anxious to see what the guys look like on the floor this year. I appreciate you, Nate, very much. You know that, and it's always good to have you on the show. Thank you very much for doing it, Nate.
Jim, thank you. Look forward to talking to you again.
Here he is. Let's go to Edmonton. Tyler in Shredmonton. Tyler, brother, what's up?
What's up, Romy? How you doing?
Good, bud. How about you?
I'm good. I'm great. Hey, John, the Giants suck. The Rangers suck, the Knicks suck, and you suck. I actually called about how Rick and how heinous he sounded yesterday. You guys can make fun of Hawk all you want, but it's in Buffalo. Rick is going to get towed before his car does. I bet if Hawk's Toyota Camry could talk, it would sound exactly like Rick in Buffalo. It'd be all like, "Hey, Hawk, it'd be nice if you changed my air filter once in a while. And while you're at it, I'd really like it if you took me for a bath at the neighborhood car wash, you D-bag." I mean, Rick's disgusting, all right? I like how he wars the Goo Goo Dolls as if these guys are Avenged Sevenfold or something. Like, no offense, Rome. I took a full advantage of their one song at all my junior high dances, Iris or whatever it's called. And I was picking up chicks to that song like a boss. But let's be real for a second. These guys used to call themselves sex maggots. Not sex magnets, sex maggots. They basically named their old band after Rick. Rick, you can flex that seven-place ribbon all you want, but I have time on my side, my friend. You've already peaked, man. You're like that old-ass Andre Ingram making the NBA as a 32-year-old just to come off the bench. You fought hard. You burned through your prime years in the minors, and now you're just a scrub role player. I'm a first-round pick. I have endorsement deals. I do cool things, man. I sign autographs. I'm going to be here at Smackoff 25, and I'll be here at Smackoff 50. I wish I could say the same for you, my friend. I want to war the Tragically Hip's famous lyrics about Rick in Buffalo. They go something like this, Romy. He's 38 years old, never kissed a girl.
Tyler. Tyler, man. Where was that in July, bro? Where was that in July? But I'll take that right now. That might have been your best call ever. Tyler in Shredmonton. Responding with a vengeance and a bat for Rick. This is so good. That's the best of the best. You can say that we have terrible calls. Will Brinson joins me right now. Will, brother, what's going on? How are you?
Jim, what's going on, man? Happy Friday. Hope all's well with you.
It's all good, man. Great Friday. Good to have you back, Will. All right, so let me start right here. If you had to sum up, Will, if you had to sum up Eli Manning and the Giants offense in one single word, what word would you choose?
Washed. They are washed, and Eli is washed, and he's been bad for several years now. And the chickens are coming home to roost, as we like to say in the South, with the way that this management and this front office and this look. Here's the they've decided to double down on Eli for multiple years, and it's resulted in an offense that can't get vertical down the field. They don't have an offensive line to protect a guy who's only okay in a fully protected pocket, and they've lost, you know, value in other areas. I mean, look, Saquon Barkley's fantastic, Jim, but this offense, if it can't make it work with Odell Beckham and Saquon Barkley, that's a major problem. And I think that the inability to see past the flaws of Eli Manning has turned the Giants into the Jets.
Will Brinson, my guest, it's well said. But what about right now? I mean, now are they at a point? Do people in the Giants organization know that he is washed up and don't want to admit it? Or, Will, are there still people in that organization that actually think that he can turn this around?
I think they believe that Eli can ride off in a white horse and end up succeeding at some point. I think they still buy into it. The reality of the situation, Jim, is that Eli Manning – like, if his name was Eli Smith, he wouldn't be going into the Hall of Fame. I mean, he's a guy with two great playoff runs and okay statistics in the regular season over a long period of time. He's got an Ironman streak, and he's got two big throws and a lot of help from some defense. But this is not a guy who, you know, he's not transcendent like his brother was. And, you know, as a result, I think that this organization gets caught up in the name value of Eli Manning. And as such, they're not willing to let him go. And it makes matters worse that they benched him for Geno freaking Smith last year, and they burnt all the goodwill to the ground. And now that they repaired the bridge, they can't go back and set fire to it again. They've kind of got to ride it out, and it's going to result in the Giants having another top five pick this year.
Will Brinson joining us. All right, Will, you mentioned Saquon Barkley and the fact that he was fantastic. I mean, when you see Barkley doing the types of things that he did last night, I mean, it seems utterly ridiculous to say this, but did the Giants make a mistake in drafting him over Sam Darnold or another quarterback?
Yes, they did, and not because Saquon Barkley's not great. The reality, Jim, is that when you look at that position and you look at the – I mean, it's a basic economic principle, and I'm not a good economic major or anything, but I know this one – opportunity cost. And when you draft a running back with a top five pick, you are passing on the opportunity to revive your franchise with a young quarterback. And this 2018 is a better example than any year we've seen, with the explosion of offenses, the need to have somebody, a quarterback who can take your offense over the top and to win games for you. And the Giants don't have that. I'm not saying they'd be 5-1 with Sam Darnold, but they would at least have hope for the future. I think when you look at the Jets, you say, all right, this club is in a good place moving forward. You know, you look at the Browns, you say this club's in a good place moving forward. You look at the Giants and you're like, oh my God, this is a train wreck, unless they get lucky and somebody like Will Greer or Jared Stidham or Ryan Finley is a franchise savior. And I just don't know that this class is going to live up to the group that they had. When you get a cluster of potential franchise quarterbacks like the one we had in 2018, you have to shoot your shot when you've got the number two overall pick. The Giants got a great player in Saquon Barkley, but it's ultimately going to cost them a lot of potential victories.
Shoot your shot, shoot your foot off, one or the other. Will Brinson joining us. And you mentioned the Browns. Will, there's so much buzz around that team right now, and in large part it's Baker Mayfield, in large part it's that defense. That defense is so nasty. I mean, they're good. They're good. Are they, in your mind, playoff good?
Yeah, I think they are, Jim, in that AFC where, and, you know, they're in a tough division because I think the Ravens are a playoff caliber and Super Bowl caliber team with their defense. You know, I think that the Bengals are a very well-balanced team, just got Vontaze Burfict back, and they should be able to continue their momentum. You can't count out the Steelers. So it's a tough division, but in the AFC, I think the Browns can make a run. My biggest concern certainly has nothing to do with the defense. You know, I think Greg Williams – it's like a walking midlife crisis, but the dude's got he's put together an incredible defense this year. They're a legit top five unit right now. And, you know, if you look at the advanced metrics, even the traditional stats, this is a team that's not going away on defense. I worry that Hugh Jackson is going to cost them at some point, you know, this season, somewhere in the range of 3 to 4 games with his bad decision making. The offense has improved with Baker Mayfield. Their yards per play are up.
you know, even against a tough Ravens defense. And I think they're going to make noise and try and chase for a wild card spot. But I think at the end of the day, Hugh Jackson manages to gas him out of the playoffs by virtue of a few questionable decisions at the end of games.
Wow. Will Brinson joining us. I would follow you on that, but before I let you go, I want you to hit you up on a few more things. They've got the Chargers well on Sunday, and that's a pretty nice test for them. Think about Philip Rivers. It seems to me, and maybe I'm not being fair when I say this, I just don't think this guy, for as much credit as he gets, I don't think that Philip Rivers gets the credit that he deserves. Are people sleeping on him right now? And if they are, what are they missing about this guy?
Yeah, you're 100% right, Jim. Everybody's sleeping on Philip. People have slept on Philip Rivers his whole career.
Right.
If you flip Rivers and Manning and gave Rivers the two rings, he's a first ballot Hall of Famer with his production. He's been a better quarterback than Eli his entire career. Doesn't get the credit for it. He's one of the best leaders in the NFL. One of the nicest dudes in the NFL. He's one of the toughest quarterbacks you'll ever see. Nobody, you know, in the past 10 years has sat in more behind more bad offensive lines and just chucked it sidearm down the field with three pass rushers beating down on him, take a big shot and get right back up. And to do it at his age, to continue to change his game and evolve into the modern NFL and play the way that he's played. When you look at his stats and what he's doing right now, he should be right there with Drew Brees when we talk about the veteran quarterback MVP conversation. I think if I'm doing my top five right now, it's Patty Mahomes, Jared Goff, Drew Brees, Philip Rivers, and Tom Brady. I mean, you know, these guys are all playing exceptionally well, and Rivers, he doesn't get the credit he deserves. People sleep on him, and I think that if they can get rid of the Chargers-ness of that team, they can really make a deep run. The only two losses they've got are to the Rams and the Chiefs. That's not a bad little resume.
Will Brinson, CBS colleague of mine. All right, Will, you mentioned Mahomes. Now, how do you not love that matchup? Kansas City going into Foxborough, and we know that Bill Belichick has made some young quarterbacks look really bad. Hell, we've known Belichick has made some veteran quarterbacks look really bad. But then again, Belichick probably has never seen a young quarterback quite like Patrick Mahomes. How do you see that matchup, and what do you think Belichick does to make Mahomes uncomfortable?
Yeah, I don't know that he has the you're right. He's like 25-1 when he goes up against quarterbacks who are, you know, 26 or younger or in their second season. The stats are crazy. He dominates rookie quarterbacks, of course, Mahomes in his second year. But I think the game plan for the Patriots, they want this game to go under. The total is 59. It's creeping 59.5, creeping towards historical numbers in terms of what Vegas has put on a single game. If this game goes under, I think the Patriots win and win pretty easily, because it means that they've established Sony Michel, who's had two really nice games in a row, that they've used James White on short little checkdowns out of the backfield, and that they've slowed the pace of this game to a crawl, allowed Tom Brady to dink and dunk and dink and dunk, wear down the Chiefs' defense, which is going to be depleted anyway and isn't very good, frankly, and ultimately, you know, pile up some points and make the Chiefs play catch-up. And I think that's what you need to do. You don't want the Chiefs to be balanced and aggressive out of the gate, because if they're playing from ahead, they can really flip you on your head. And Andy Reid did that last year. A little bit of a vengeance game here for New England. I think the Patriots – Jim, you can't get the Patriots on Sunday night in primetime -3.5 and bet on them and be fading the public very often, and you've got the chance right now. It's a pretty good little opportunity.
Will, I love it. So give the clones something. Throw them a bone. Patriots -3. How do you bet that? And if the over-under is 59 or 59.5, what would you do with that?
I would take the over. Because you don't want to, as we said on the Pick Six podcast, you don't want to step in the freight train that is the under on that one. You could feel bad 20 minutes into that game. I think the play here is the Patriots. If you look at the way that they go against the spread, and I wrote about this on my CBSSports.com best bets column today, if you look at their numbers when they're favored by less than a touchdown at home, you don't get it very often. I would hammer the Patriots and bank on Bill Belichick. You're not going to get rich gambling against Bill Belichick. I'll tell you that much.
I love that. Will Brinson, my guest, read that column for the best bets. Will, one last thing. If Jason Garrett coached for anybody other than Jerry Jones, would he still be coaching?
No way. He wouldn't even get demoted to offensive coordinator. He's a professional clapper. I'm not sure what he does. He stands on the sidelines, claps, and then looks confused when it's 4th-and-1 and he's got to make a call. You know, look, he was it's been a while since he's really done anything of note. And I think, as Jason Lockenfor has said to me multiple times, that Jerry Jones keeps him around because there's no controversy with what his head coach wants. He is the polar opposite of a
Bill Parcells.
Jimmy Johnson, Bill Parcells. Yeah, I was about to say Bill Walsh. Bill Parcells or Jimmy Johnson. Like, those guys were hard-headed football guys who said, we want to shop for the groceries. And Jerry Jones, you know, he didn't want that. He wants to win a Super Bowl title with Jason Garrett as his coach to say, I did this, this is all on me, and to take all the credit. And it's not going to happen as long as he's trotting out this current iteration of a coaching staff and roster.
Win a Super Bowl? I don't know if this guy's going to win a playoff game. Yeah, why would you want to keep Jimmy Johnson around? He only won Super Bowls every year. He only put that team together. But you're exactly right. That's exactly why Garrett is still the coach there. He is a senior NFL writer for CBS Sports. He is the host of the Pick 6 NFL podcast. You can also read him online. He's got his best bets up right now. Good friend of the program. Will, you just crushed it. Great to have you back, Will. Thanks so much.
Always a pleasure, Jim. Have a great weekend, man.
Great job, Will. What's going on? Welcome to the jungle. My name is Jim Rome. Nice to have you here on a Monday. What a crazy weekend that was. An amazing weekend, and I could not wait to get back to get in front of this mic, get in front of these CBS Sports Network cameras, and talk about what I saw over the weekend. And I want to get your thoughts, too. I need to hear from you. What do you think about what went down? I'm not starting with Sunday. I'm starting with Saturday night.
He ran and jumped over the octagon.
I have never seen the look on McGregor's face when he was sitting on that mat once it was over. You know, the look on his face right before Habib's dudes jumped him. You know, that part where they took what should have been the best night ever for Team Habib and they wrecked it.
My balls was hot.
Kevin Ioi is my guest.
This is not who MMA fighters are. There was a lot of new people watching on Saturday for the first time.
It's
and they
disgusting.
Saw something that wasn't really representative of how MMA athletes conduct themselves.
Touchdown!
Sitting at 5-0, heading into Foxborough, the big man and his young QB get to go into the hood in Tommy's house. It's something we did not know they had. A legitimate defense, maybe. I'm going to say it again. I said it before that game on national television.
Move over, Jerry Jones. The Cleveland Browns are America's team, coach.
Way to pick me up, fellas. Way to make me look good, fellas. But I knew you would.
Browns.
Have you bought his whiskey yet?
No, I don't drink.
Would you pay for a rematch?
Yes, I would, and I think McGregor would whoop his ass.
Breeze has done it.
This just in. Drew Breeze is very good at the sport of football. This was a guy that nobody wanted. Let's not forget, Nick Saban and the Miami Dolphins went with Dante Culpepper over Drew Brees.
Both guys were good players, so quit asking.
Is daddy happy? Turn that freaking phone around. Is daddy happy? Daddy wants to go have sex again. Jim Trotter.
And Alex appears on the landing up above, and he sees Nick, and he yells out very loudly, turns around and walks back in.
Twitter.
Mr. Trotter, in this house, we say butthole.
Butthole.
Signed
butthole.
The CBS censors.
Butthole.
Twitter.
That's exactly what I'm talking about. I would hate for that ever to get back to Ron Darling. Hey, Ron, did you hear Rome? He called you a little weasel. No, I did not. Salty Sarah called you a little weasel. And by the way, Salty Sarah, usually that's the kind of guy that you're thirsty for. Best troll job I've seen in a long time. I'll say it again. The Yankees are good. The Sox are better. Right now, better team, better manager,
better
organization. They're just better. Empty chair in the back row.
Batman
is not here.
Jury duty.
Dude, I hope you're doing your very best to make yourself as unattractive as possible. Providing your civic duty. Jordan Cronkrite, did you have any idea yet something that special in you for that game?
Well, before I even get to that, I just want to know, how do I get wrecked?
Wreck him!
I just need to know.
Fourth and one from the other guy's 43.
It was a long one.
Fourth and 1 5/8.
Close to two.
That's different. It's close to two. Cameron Jordan.
If I can get, you know, a half step faster, then I'm going to close in a lot more sacks. I've already missed about three of them, and I'm kicking myself in the foot. Really irritated at myself.
Do you always think about the ones that you didn't get as opposed to the ones that you did get?
Oh, yeah. You can't complain about the meal you had. You can only complain about the meal you're looking forward to.
I'm eating macadamia nuts currently out of my fanny pack.
What's the difference between a mustache and a, quote, mustache?
Anyone can grow a mustache. I grew a mustache.
Lots to cover with Sean Casey.
Jeff Bagwell. He's like, hey, Case, if you ever point at somebody around the third base again, I'm coming out there. I wanted to tell him, like, my buddies are here, and I was the MVP of the trip.
Denzel Ward. What does the team mean to the town, and how is the town responding to this particular team?
You could just feel the energy on the sideline and the crowd. Come to Cleveland, you're just going to feel it. It's just like a family.
Dre Kirkpatrick.
When he first came, we was in OTAs. You can't press. That's not what we do around here. We press corners. So, of course, you know, I'm like, I already know he's so fast.
Twitter! You need me, signed Nancy K. She got kneecaps. It's not the same thing. Need.
We're in October. I'm 2 months away. I'm 8 weeks away from this plan working out. And now I got to go fish it out of the yard for $500 and go to the DMV.
Time now for a sports update.
Email.
Caught Darwin's update. Is the S in CBS for shredded? Darwin, it's all you, bro.
All right, Jim. I don't know what to do with that intro. I'll take it. Barring a tie tonight.
Fabian, what's going on?
On October the 1st, I had to take a drug test, right? So today's the 11th and I haven't heard anything. Therefore, I'm assuming I passed.
I don't know. Fabian, I don't know if that's true.
If it would have came out positive, they would have took my ugly ass out of the truck already, dude.
Kale's your prototypical a-hole. He's too stupid to realize the only people who live in Vegas are the ones who failed everywhere else. I'm gonna hunt you down and kick your ass.
It is picked off.
He's like the guy in the office that doesn't use underarm deodorant, and then he gets invited to the company dinner, and nobody can eat their food.
Oh, yeah, brother. What you gonna do?
When I try to draw you offsides on fourth down.
Hey, Hawk. It'd be nice if you changed my air filter once in a while, you D-bag.
Will, if you had to sum up Eli Manning in one single word.
Watch.
Eli is watch.
Who just kissed you? There's a big old
That's not lipstick.
Dude.
Under arrest for what?
My fat-ass father agrees.
Come on, you show us smoke some weed with you.
Sandy Duncan, let me think. Funny thing or iconic thing?
Iona.
Thick.
Go fornicate himself.
Don't give a sh.
Still hometown love.
She has one eye.
Vertigo.
Roll me wrong.
Always thank you.
Daddy's always.
Happy Friday.
Good night now! Good night now!